Lampstand Press presents Weft History Audio, original material written by Scott Somerville, edited and read aloud by Nate Somerville, with color commentary provided by me, Ted the Thread,
and special appearances by Christina Somerville as Nellie the Needle.
Year 2, Week 2. The Byzantine Empire and the Eastern Orthodox Church. This week is devoted to learning about the lands and cultures of the Byzantine Empire. You probably remember that in 395 AD, the Roman Empire was permanently split into the Western Roman Empire and the Eastern Roman Empire. This week, we will see the start of a split in the Christian Church as well. The culture and legacy of the Byzantine Empire carries on in the Eastern Orthodox churches, even though it has been almost 1,000 years since those churches split with the Roman Catholic Church. The word Byzantine comes from Byzantium, the Greek name for a city on the waterway that connects the Black Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. There, Constantine the Great built the new capital city of the Eastern Roman Empire on the ruins of the ancient city of Byzantium, and he named it Constantinople. When he started living in the Eastern capital, anybody who was anybody, the rich, the scholars, and the leaders of Roman culture, moved there too. As we talked about last week, the Western Roman Empire disintegrated when savage barbarian tribes from the north attacked it.
Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Swamp Thing, we can all watch Rome is burning, abominable snowmen, savage barbarians, Dark Ages, go Dark Ages!
Well, I guess we know what team you're on, Ted.
That's right, let it all burn! Fire, chaos, destruction, woohoo!
I really don't think most of the Romans agreed with you. Unlike the West, the eastern half of the empire survived and lived on as the Byzantine Empire. Initially, the Byzantines were very Roman. Over time, their culture became a real mixture of Eastern and Western ways. The Byzantine Empire was strongest under one of its earliest and greatest emperors, Justinian I. Under Justinian, the Byzantines conquered lands around the Mediterranean Sea that had been lost by the Western Roman Empire. They expanded trade with the Far East and established a style of art and architecture all their own. Justinian wanted to bring back the glory days of Rome by regaining territory in the West. Under his leadership, the empire reconquered Italy. They took the southeastern coast of Spain, and they ruled much of northern Africa. Justinian was an Orthodox Christian who hunted down heretics, Jews, and pagans. In 529 AD, he shut down the schools of philosophy in Athens because of their non-Christian teachings.
He shut down schools? This guy is my hero. This story just keeps getting better and better. I mean, the next thing you'll be telling me is that people started rebelling and rioting in the streets.
Actually, the people of Constantinople did not love Justinian. So in 532, they revolted and burned down the central part of the city.
Aw, man, what did I tell you? This is a great story.
Justinian did not give up. He rebuilt the city, including a huge new church, the famous Hagia Sophia, which means holy wisdom. He also built aqueducts, fortresses, harbors, churches, monasteries, and public buildings all over the empire. All of this was very expensive. Justinian's empire was bankrupt when he finally died in 565. And then the barbarians came. Slavs and Avars invaded the Balkans, and the Persians attacked from the east. Things got even worse in the next century. The Arabs attacked the weakened empire after Muhammad converted them to Islam in 634. By 642, these Muslim Arabs had conquered Syria, Palestine, and Egypt.
Weren't the Arabs the children of Abraham's son, Ishmael?
Right. That's very good, Ted.
So then this Mohawk guy gave them funny haircuts and turned them into Indians?
Nope. You're back to being wrong. Muhammad was a prophet, and the religion that he taught was called Islam. You might have heard the name Allah. That is the name for God in Islam.
So, how did they get to be so strong? Did they work out a lot? Did they start eating a ton of spinach? Were they like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast? And they ate 5 dozen eggs every morning to help them get strong?
Are you talking about the Muslims?
Yeah, the Arabs became the Muslims. Did they become professional wrestlers and wear silly costumes?
Islam is a word in Arabic that means submitted to God. And Muslim is another Arabic word that means someone who is submitted. Or another way of putting it is that a Muslim believes in the teachings of Islam. They worship Allah as God.
Ha! Huh. Weird, but I'll take your word for it.
By the early 700s, the Byzantine Empire was down to a fraction of its former size. They only held Turkey, the Balkan coast, the south of Italy, and a few islands in the Mediterranean. The Germanic tribe that drove Justinian's forces out of Italy were called the Lombards. They originally inhabited an island in the Baltic Sea near Sweden, way to the north. But they migrated, first into what we know as Germany, and then down to present-day Austria. They invaded Italy in 568 AD. They took over most of Italy, driving out the Byzantine forces and threatening the popes who ruled what was left of Rome. The Lombards were neither Catholic nor Orthodox. They were either pagans or Arians. In 754, Pope Stephen II asked another barbarian group, the Franks, for help. The Frankish leader, whose name was Pepin the Short, came to the rescue. He invaded Italy, defeated the Lombards, and then gave some of the land that he took from them to the Pope in 756. This gift, called Pepin's donation, turned the popes into princes of their own papal states. In 774, Charlemagne, Pepin's son, crushed the Lombards once and for all. We're going to be learning more about Charlemagne in week 4. By the time the Lombards were attacking Italy, what used to be Rome was in bad shape. The Byzantine Empire kept classical culture alive to some degree in the East, but the light of learning almost went out completely in the West. The only places where books could be reliably found were monasteries, which kept reading alive, although only just barely, throughout Europe's darkest days.
I think you mean libraries? A library is where you find books, right? Well, it's no wonder people had trouble reading with all this Dark Ages business going on. But didn't they know about light bulbs?
Nope, no light bulbs. They only had candles, and even those were expensive and hard to make. Most people were so busy living their lives that they didn't have time to learn how to read. And there were only a few books left. The rest had been burned or lost.
So then what is a monastery? Is that a place where they keep monsters? Eek! Help!
Calm down, Nelly. It's okay. A monastery is a place where monks all live together.
Monks? Are monks some strange kind of monkey, Mr. Nate?
A monk is someone who has devoted their lives to serving God. A lady monk is called a nun. Many religions have monks and nuns. Usually, monks don't have any money or own anything. Some monks grow their own food, while others wander around preaching about God and eating whatever food people are willing to share with them.
But if they don't own anything, how can they have a home? How can there be a monastery or a nunnastery?
The place where nuns live together is called a nunnery. Monasteries and nunneries were usually built on land that rich people gave to the church. The monks and nuns would work hard and live very simply, often giving away all their extra food and money to the poor. But over time, because they were diligent and hardworking, they usually built places to worship, eat, sleep, store extra food, make things, and also a library where they could keep their books and their Bibles.
And that's how they kept books safe during the Dark Ages?
That's right. God used the monks and nuns to keep many important books safe, especially the Bible during those hard and dangerous times. You kids will be learning about monasteries this week. They began to be built around 200 years after Jesus, when Christianity started to be more acceptable in the Roman Empire. Just as the world began to accept Christianity, some Christians began to turn their backs on the world. The earliest monks were hermits, people who left civilization to dwell alone in desert places. They would live in strange places, like in caves or under trees. About 100 years after these first hermits, monks began to live together in monasteries, where people sought to live lives of holiness and devotion to God by working, praying, and serving the poor. In the 400s, St. Patrick established monasteries that helped carry the gospel on to Scotland and then down into England. Patrick was born in Roman Britain. When he was about 16, he was captured by Irish raiders and taken as a slave to Ireland, where he lived for 6 years before escaping and returning to his family. He returned to Ireland later as a missionary and converted most of Ireland's tribes to Christ.
Wait, is this the guy who turned everything green? St. Paddy, who pinches people in the middle of March Madness? Did he invent basketball? Is that why orange and green are enemies? Because he was green and he always beat his opponents while playing with an orange basketball?
I'm not even sure where to start with all that. Green is the color for people who like St. Patrick, and orange was the color for people who didn't like him. St. Patrick's Day happens in March, when everybody who loves basketball is going crazy trying to watch all those games at once. And no, St. Patrick did not invent basketball.
Sure, but what do you know about basketball anyways? I think he probably did invent basketball.
Okay, I don't know very much about basketball, it's true. But I'm pretty sure that St. Patrick didn't play basketball, even though today there is a team called the Celtics. A couple of Patrick's letters have survived. In his letter, Confessio, he wrote that he had baptized thousands of people. He also ordained priests to lead the new Christian communities. He converted wealthy women, some of whom became nuns. Remember that a nun is a lady monk. He converted several sons of kings to Christianity too. Later, historians told amazing stories of his contests with druids and pagan kings. According to these sources, he overthrew the pagan idols and called down God's curses on those who opposed the gospel. Ireland is full of legends of St. Patrick. They say that he banished snakes from the island. There isn't much evidence that there were ever any snakes in Ireland, but the druids did use serpent symbols in their rituals, and Patrick certainly went after that practice. They say that Patrick taught the Irish about the Trinity by showing them a shamrock, which is a clover, and telling them that the three leaves symbolized the three persons in one God. One piece of clover has three leaves. There is one God and three persons. Patrick started something big in Ireland. Courageous Irish monks took the Christian message back across the narrow sea to Scotland, where they built more monasteries. And those monks then took the message south into England. And the English monks crossed the English Channel to carry the gospel further south into Gaul, what is now France. These monasteries were a major means of keeping reading alive during the long dark ages. In Western Europe, almost no one could read.
Do we have a name for people who can't read?
Being able to read is called literate, from the same root word that we use for letters. If you can read letters, then you are literate. If you cannot read, then we say that you are illiterate, sort of like legal and illegal. There was a lot more literacy in the Byzantine Empire than in the West, but it was still pretty rare. One could be a very educated person in Byzantium and still not know how to read. That's because most of education consisted of learning facts and stories. The Byzantines might have been mostly illiterate, but that doesn't mean that they were ignorant. Because they couldn't read, pictures were important to them. People used religious pictures called icons to help them worship, even though the Ten Commandments forbid the making of any graven image. When the Byzantine emperors tried to outlaw icons, it led to one of the great conflicts in church history, the iconoclastic controversy.
Cool! Dinosaurs! Was this before or after the Jurassic period?
Hey, Ted, can I get the front seat of the time machine this week? You had it all last year.
But, we're going to the iconoclastic controversy. It's my favorite dinosaur era ever. I have to be in the front seat so that I can see everything.
But you don't even know what iconoclastic is, Ted.
I do too. It's those dinosaurs that swim with lots of teeth.
Well, they're dinosaurs. They pretty much all have lots of teeth. And that's an ichthyosaur.
Whoa. Time out. Iconoclastic is a Greek word for breaking icons.
Well, I'm all for breaking things. Man, I love this year so far. Big feats and Sasquatches burn Rome. Mohawk turns the Arabs into Muslims. And now we've got dinosaurs breaking pictures. Ha 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 ha, yes!
Oh boy, I don't think he's listening very well to what I'm trying to tell him. The fight over icons between the emperor and the church weakened the empire at a critical moment, just when the Muslims were starting to fight the Byzantines for territory. But we'll be looking at that conflict more next week. Despite the emperor's attempt to get rid of icons, the Eastern Orthodox churches refused to give them up. They have retained their icons to this day, and this has had a major influence on Eastern art. Byzantine art is beautiful, but it's very different from what we are used to in the West. In the West, artists strive to paint new or different things, to make something that has never been seen before. Byzantine art, by contrast, generally tries to show what is eternal, what has always been, which therefore cannot be new. Orthodox painters and architects, those are people who design buildings, are not allowed to decorate just any way that they want. There are strict rules as to what may be shown and how. Most pictures only show people from the front on a solid background of gold or a single color. The goal is not to make people look real, but to show them as part of God's eternal plan. Orthodox churches are built to be plain on the outside and beautifully decorated on the inside. This is done to show that the world without the church is empty, and the beauty of Jesus, who can be found within the church, is amazing. Orthodox churches try to get people to look upwards. The worshiper's eye is drawn up to the dome, which usually has pictures of the resurrected Christ. This reminds them every week that Jesus has risen from the dead. The Byzantine armies eventually drove back the Arabs on several fronts. From 867 to 1025, under Emperor Basil I and his descendants, the empire had another major period of success. For nearly 200 years, the Byzantine Empire was doing very well, but that didn't last. A quarrel with the West began in 1054. That year, an argument over the Pope's authority in the empire led to a permanent split between the churches in the Western and Eastern sections.
Wait a second. Why are they arguing about the authority of the Pope? Why should anyone listen to the Pope anyways?
Pope comes from the Italian word for papa, which means father. Everyone knows that dad is in charge. You have to obey your papa.
But I definitely don't have to obey an Italian papa. Well, I mean, not unless he knows how to make pizza.
Can't you ever think about anything but eating, Ted?
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you all about...
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You two have been arguing a lot the past couple weeks. You're a lot like the Romans and the people in Europe after the fall of the empire. They argued a lot, too, over many different issues, and it brought them down into the Dark Ages. Is that what you want to have happen to you two?
Well, Nellie probably doesn't because she's scared of the dark.
I am not. I just like my nightlight and rainbow teddy with a glowing belly.
Oh, well, in one ear and out the other. By 1071, seafaring Normans from the north part of France had conquered the Byzantine lands of Sicily and southern Italy. In that same year, the Turks defeated a Byzantine army in Asia Minor, threatening their control over what is now Turkey. The Byzantine emperor asked the Christians in the West to help them defend the empire against the Turks, and the result was the Crusades, which started off with Christians attacking Muslims and capturing Jerusalem. But by the Fourth Crusade in 1204, Catholic Christians were starting to attack Orthodox Christians in Constantinople. The Byzantines eventually took back their capital city, but the Turks took Asia Minor, and the Serbs took over the Balkans. By the late 1300s, all that was left of the Byzantine Empire was Greece and the city of Constantinople. The empire ended in 1453, when the Ottoman Turks captured Constantinople. The last Byzantine emperor, Constantine the 11th, died while defending his city. The Eastern Orthodox churches carry on the traditions of Byzantium. They include churches in Greece, Russia, Eastern Europe, and Western Asia. About 170 million people belong to the Eastern Orthodox churches. The Eastern and Western churches had been drifting apart ever since the Roman Empire was divided in 395 AD, but the split between them became permanent in 1054. The two groups of churches argued about the Trinity. The Western Church taught that God the Father begat Jesus, and then the Holy Spirit came from both the Father and the Son. The Eastern Church taught that the Holy Spirit came from the Father alone. This difference showed up as a single Latin word in the Creed, filioque, which means "and from the Son." But that one word helped to divide the East from the West. Although the empire finally vanished, it still lasted for a very long time, over 1,000 years. That's more than 4 times longer than the United States has even been a country. And don't forget that Rome had already existed for more than 1,000 years before Constantine first moved his capital to Byzantium. So the total lifespan of the Roman culture was more than 2,000 years.
So, what you're really saying is that this is going to be a long journey through time, and I'd better schedule frequent potty breaks and order up a whole bunch of popcorn.
Something like that, yeah. During its long history, the Byzantine Empire protected much of Europe from the attacks of barbarians and eastern invaders like the Arabs and the Turks. The Byzantines preserved ancient Greek literature and philosophy, as well as Roman traditions in government and law. Their empire lasted a long time, and it still affects the world today. Millions of people continue to worship God in the Eastern Orthodox churches, and those churches carry on the legacy of the Byzantine Empire.